So I think we can get to our interview.
All right.
Again, the Forest Bird Charter School is gearing up for the 2025-26 academic school year. It's coming right up, and we want to hear all about what's on the agenda and other school news. So just for a moment, can we highlight some of the... I always like to look back because the year before and through the summer kind of informs where we're going. Do we want to take a look at to what's coming up?
Well, I would love to have Rachel talk about the new theater choir program she's putting together. We started last year with choir. She was part-time choir, part-time sixth grade teacher. And it was such a hit and a wonderful thing that she's going to be full-time. So, Rachel, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I am thrilled to be able to teach choir and theater. That's my passion. That's my love. So to be able to teach it full-time is great. I started out with a small but mighty group in my first trimester and ended with like three times as many kids at the end of the year. So I'm just excited to be able to continue pushing, you know, kids to really put themselves out there and, you know, show the community and family what they got.
So why is it important? What do they learn besides the fun of singing? We know that's really fun, but what there's more to it than that. It really influences so much of their development and growth forward into the world.
I would say the biggest thing is self-confidence, courage. And then I really focus in my classroom on community. You're an ensemble. To do something that's singing or theater related, to put your true authentic self out there, you have to be willing to be a trustworthy person for other people to be able to do the same. So really teaching them the skill of how to be an empathetic person, how to be in somebody else's shoes, and how do you come alongside people in that journey.
So we call this kind of performing arts. So it's an art form. And what is your background and what do you bring to the table?
Oh, great. Susie, I'm so glad you asked. So my background is I was a choir and theater teacher for 7th and 8th grade students for about 6 years. But I fell in love with music in like 6th, 7th grade. And I actually got to teach it in the same classroom that I fell in love with it in my hometown, which was pretty remarkable. To kind of see that as full circle.
And where was your hometown?
It was Santa Barbara, California. Yeah. And so from there, I really kind of did a bunch of extra things on the side as well. Did summer camps, helped out here and there. And then I pushed myself as well. If I'm going to demand to have students, you know, be performing and going out in the community and supporting the program, I had to do the same. So when I had students go and fundraise and ask businesses for donations, I did the same. Asking them to perform, when I got approached to perform somewhere, I did the same thing. And I was nervous and I felt all the emotions that the students were feeling, but I did those things in order to lead by example.
And now you're the new performance arts teacher called choir and
Theater. If you want to be dramatic about it.
Right. So is there a... Okay, so that's really a new to Forest Bird Charter School.
Well, we had it a while ago before COVID, and it kind of tapered off. Paul Gunter was our music teacher at the time, and he now has different pursuits and doing wonderful community things. When he left... The program tapered off, and then COVID happened, and then singing wasn't quite the thing to do that year. So it's taken a little while to find the perfect person to come in, rebuild the programs, and particularly with theater, because it's even been longer for theater. And last year, Rachel, I couldn't have even asked for a better person to come in and do that. I want to highlight one of the things she did last year that was just simply amazing was her theater kids. Usually you think of theater and they get a play and they teach out of the play and they do a like a rote play. Her kids wrote the play, performed the play. So she took them from the conception to the very end, and it was incredible.
It's really perfect. And when you think about to have that whole picture, they can see what's going on. It's fuller.
Yeah.
It's more comprehensive. But also when you think about singing and performing, it brings balance to the whole academic picture. I know it supports learning geometry or learning any science or the STEM program, we call that. It balances. So that's the new program with choir and theater teacher Rachel Lacamari. So welcome to
Thank you.
Yeah. And new principal Amber Williams.
Good morning. Again.
Good morning. And you're brand new to Forest Bird Charter School.
Yes.
What is the role of the principal there, as far as you know right now?
So right now, I am doing a lot of learning as to what that role looks like. I've spent a lot of time looking at student information, starting to make those relationships with families and parents and students. I haven't met a ton of people yet because, of course, we're just starting to go, but I've had a few interactions that have been really positive and great. I'm hoping to learn from the staff kind of what their vision is and help support and kind of lead that a little bit.
I'm kind of putting her on the spot by bringing her because she's it's only 2.5 weeks that she's been at work.
So this
This is completely new. But may I ask her a question? Of course, I just did.
No, please do, Mary.
So, Amber, knowing you've worked in traditional public schools before, and now you're looking at the 2.5 weeks you've been with us at Charter, have you seen any differences between the two that maybe families would like to know to come in?
Yeah. I think there's some huge differences, neither being better or worse, but just that Forest Bird seems to be a little more, they communicate a little bit more than I've seen in the past. They invite the families and the community into the school quite a bit, which is a little bit different than what I've seen in the past. From my perspective, and again, I haven't been there for very long, but everybody there seems excited and happy to be there and interested in what is best for the students and how to help them grow and all of those things. And I think that that all exists in the traditional schools as well. I just don't think that it's as prevalent because the charter's a little smaller. And so I think it's easier sometimes to have all of those things and people supporting when you're dealing with a smaller student population.
Similar requirements and regulations as far as testing and things like that. Is that part of your job too?
Yeah.
Your position?
Yes, it is. And I haven't done the standardized testing, of course, yet at Forest Bird, but my understanding is that it's still required. You still have to do it, but maybe doesn't have such an emphasis on it. Not such weight as to how the students are expected to perform on those tests.
Yeah, charters have the same laws and regulations because we're a public school as any other public school. So it is kind of a misnomer that we don't have to follow those things. We do, but we follow them within our philosophy of the school, and we stick very closely to our philosophy, which is project-based learning and community relationships and mastery learning. And so that's what we need to always keep in mind. So the standardized testing, we look at that as it's helpful to know where the kids are and how they're doing. But we take it also with a bit of a grain of salt because our philosophy is the idea that the students show us what they can do, because sometimes not everybody's a tester and they freak out. I freak out and get a little anxiety when you're filling in the buttons or clicking on the right answer versus you can actually take the skills you learn and put them into place, which, you know, that goes along with what our job market really is asking for our students to do with welding and construction, and the hands-on is important.
And our world is asking for that. I think it would be a good moment in time because there are folks listening right now to back up, kind of take a pause backwards, and give a little history of the Forest Bird Charter School, when it started, what is different. You kind of hit on some of the differences, how it's licensed, so to speak, or chartered. It's a charter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a history of how it started and why and how it's been going.
They opened the doors in 2001 here in Sandpoint. We were one of the first charter schools. I think we were the third in the state. The first one was opened up in 1998. So, it started in a little tiny classroom, and we grew to a campus of two buildings and 6 through 12. And it's had growing pains in that. We do get public funds, too, so that's the same as traditional schools. We get state and federal money, but a huge difference is we do not levy. So we don't get any of the levy money that's added in the community. So we stay within our budgets. We do have some stricter rules around staying in our budget and making sure we are in compliance. The charter school from 2001 has grown in enrollment quite a bit. So right now we're sitting at 285 students. And I'm just going to do a shameless plug here. We do have a few more seats left. If you guys want to be part of the charter school, come and apply.
How would they make that contact?
You can call our offices. They're open now. You can apply online at our website, which is forestbirdcharterschool.org, I think it is.
Yep.
And there's a little apply button there. And we don't discriminate on the students we take, which is another misnomer on charter schools. Mm-hmm. We cannot. Yes. Discriminate. And so the application process is really interesting because you put your name in the application and we take it and then we get education records. So we don't know when you apply if your student is high needs or brilliant or anything like that. And then we work with the individual students when they come in.
So what are some of the infrastructure that you have in place to meet all of the student needs? Obviously, great teachers.
Amazing teachers. Yeah. We have a special ed department, just like any other school. And we have I have to do a shout out to our special ed team, mm-hmm. with Kenda, Shaney, Debbie, Brittany, and Brenda. Mm-hmm. They are an amazing team. Then for honors and AP, we don't have AP classes, but we incorporate honors within our classes. So any student may do additional work or up the level of their learning to receive honors credit. And instead of AP classes, we really tune into college credits. And so if a student really wants to go to that level, they're ready in high school, they can start doing college classes, and we do have associate's degrees that students graduate with.
How would they access college classes? Through the internet and online, or is there another?
They work with our academic advisor, Ben Evans, to figure out what's their best path. Not everybody's path leads to college, definitely. But if that's the student's path, he sets them up with NIC or U of I, and they work with the college to get the right classes in order to get those associate's degrees. On the norm, we have about 4 students a year graduate with an associate degree, which they have before high school graduation, which mm-hmm. I think is so fun.
Saves money, too.
Oh, mm-hmm. saves a ton of money.
Yes.
The State Department has an advanced opportunities program, and so their associate's degree is almost 100% paid for if they do it in high school.
In high school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great program.
It's beautiful.
And like you said, 3 or 4 students graduate with that degree?
Normally it's around 4. Last year we had 2, but we had a very small graduating mm-hmm. class last year.
So mm-hmm. what is, looking at budgets, I mean, just the practicality of a charter school not getting levy money.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you balance that? I'm thinking of the sports. You don't have a huge sports program that is very expensive.
Right.
So how is that all balanced out?
Oh, well, I'm going to go to sports. So I always support the levy here because our students do have advantages. They go to Sandpoint High School for sports.
Okay.
We don't have a sports program, but
they can participate.
They do, and they're great athletes if they decide to do that. Budgeting, we're very. I'm the budgeter with Greta Warren, who's. I just relate to everybody's fantastic. So I'm going to just say it again. Greta Warren's fantastic. But we just watch our money very well. Sometimes we have to do cuts. Sometimes we go very skinny. Sometimes we have a little extra money and we buy supplies and some bonus our teachers out at the end of the year if we have a little extra because they deserve it. They don't get paid enough. Nobody does in education, in my estimation.
We all agree.
Yeah. So this year, it's a little tight, I have to admit, Susie, because we had to fix a water line coming into the school. I had a leak, and that was a surprise expense. And we're adding a couple more rooms inside the high school to accommodate some of our needs. So in another shameless plug, hey, if you would like to donate to our STEM Mastery project-based learning school, that would be great because we are looking for donations because of those extra expenses.
So tell us about the STEM Mastery School program. Is that what you called it?
Yes. So we last year we added the STEM diploma because one of our pathways because we're a STEM school. So that's science, technology, engineering, and math. Because we are adding it as a diploma, we're adding more science, technology, engineering, math classes to the school.
Are you finding out students really motivate towards that?
It kind of naturally lends itself to that hands-on environment, too. Mm-hmm. And I find if you have the right classes, the kids are so interested. Mm-hmm. So we have it's like a geocaching class coming up, but they're learning about everything about the earth and how you do longitude and latitude. It's more than just geocaching, which kids are interested in, and they get to go find things too.
So the science teacher would have that be part of their curriculum?
Oh, yes, that's an option because how we have students choose classes is much different than a traditional public school. For example, we talk a lot about the STEM. But the English classes, instead of English 1, English 2, English 3, English 4 that a lot of schools have, we have the types of literature and the students choose the type of literature they like. So we have science fiction literature, classical literature. We have revenge literature, which sounds dark and deep and awful right now, but when it came out of my mouth. But it's like Count of Monte Cristo and how you deal with those feelings and the negative repercussions of just having revenge in your mind. So the kids, it's same with science. They have different science classes they can choose. The state changed a lot, not a lot, but they changed significantly some of the requirements for graduation, which opened up this year for us more opportunity instead of physical science. We have cornerstones to science in ninth grade, and they're going to learn all different sciences through project-based learning. And so we have a little more eclectic offerings that we offer.
So that was one of my questions. Curriculum development, there are state regulations that you have to follow, but it sounds like there's a broad spectrum of choices, and it's opened up a little bit, as you said. What are some of those requirements or standards, we'll call them, that the state puts forth? And do they change quite a bit? And how are you informed of that and kind of move forward?
Well, I can speak to that.
Curriculum development,
yeah. I think that's the beauty of this school. And what drew me as an applicant towards it was having the freedom to create the curriculum. But obviously having it being aligned to the Idaho state standard. So we are still teaching that same level of rigor and expectation to the students, but we're doing it in our project-based learning way as we, the teacher, feel is best fit for the student in our room. And I think that's what's so beautiful about Forest Bird Charter School is we have a lot of say and input and weight into what we think is going to be best in our classrooms. And that has been a true joy for me, for sure.
How do you meet? So you have a classroom of, I think you try to keep the numbers down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Say you had 20 in a classroom. How do you meet each individual child that's almost an art form of teaching, art of teaching kind of thing.
I would say because of the pillars that Mary had talked about as kind of our mission statement for our school being mm-hmm. project-based learning, there's a lot of individuality within that. So students get to kind of navigate their own path, and we as the teacher have that kind of mindset of what is my expectation for all students to make sure that they have mastery over, another kind of cornerstone in our mission statement. But there's that individual journey component that we can then ask them further questions and push them even further to, you know, exceed their own abilities and limits and challenge them on their own journey, which I think is awesome.
But very specifically, you have a classroom. How many mm-hmm. in your classrooms do you have limits? Or?
Well, it's no more than 22, but most okay. of them range between 10 and 15.
Oh, so that's how you do it. The mm-hmm. teacher can actually see each child. It's not a huge classroom of students that you have to try to get to know. You actually have the opportunity, the benefit of a small classroom. Mm-hmm.
Which goes back to Amber's point about relationship and having families come in, just having that more kind of familiar sense with your students and really having communication mm-hmm. be, you know, a big, big point for us. There's constant check-ins and knowing where students are at.
It sounds like a challenge, but it sounds like what most teachers would really want to be in an environment like that because?
Well, Amber. But I also came from a background of having a classroom Rachel? Size of 36. Uh-huh. So I feel the difference. I know what it's like to have a classroom in a public school where I had 36 students. And as hard as I tried, I can't say that I had that same time to be able to get to know each one of those kids as I had last year with the kids in my room.
Amazing. That's a real benefit. And so just backing up to my first question, what do teachers do in the summer? Mm. What is the, besides hopefully relax and go play in the water?
Go on, Rachel.
Okay. I do a vacation. I know it's going to sound a little funny. I do take a break. There is time for break. I am a teacher that I think does represent quite a few teachers as well. My brain is always going. So I'm always thinking about, okay, what do I want my classes to look like next year? What do I want my, I'm a big proponent of my physical space. I want my physical space to be a representation of what I want the students to learn. So I've been going in since the beginning of August and changing up things in my room now that I'm full-time elective. So I wanted my space to reflect that and really have students come in and have a sense of buy-in just the second they walk in the door.
So you invite them to come in during the summer?
No. I mean, like when they walk in, it's done. Uh-huh. And they're like, whoa, this looks different. Like, mm-hmm. yes, it does.
You want to get their attention.
I do.
Because there's so much going on in the world with mm-hmm. social media. And so you have to go a little step further to get that attention.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about opportunities for further education in the, whatever you might call it, for teachers in the summer.
This year, right after school let out, the teachers spent a week on learning more about project-based learnings, and they had created new projects to offer up this year. We're also doing next week a trauma-informed training because we're becoming a trauma-informed school, and how to work with students who have experienced trauma. Now, everybody's experienced some trauma in their life. It could be minor to something very big, but experiencing COVID is a moment of trauma. So it was important mm-hmm. for me to bring in training for all of our teachers so they have the consistent tools across the board to be able to help our students learn more. Because if they're in a trauma moment, then they can't learn. That's all they can focus on. And we want to progress them as their growth as much as we can in a year.
Well, you kind of answered my next question. Why is it important? It really, it sounds like it breaks the barrier to, it helps enhance the learning if they are met and really recognize that they have experienced trauma.
What do you think, Amber, about the trauma? We started the trauma-informed stuff.
We did. I think it's wonderful. I think that we do absolutely live in a world where everybody has had some experience of trauma in their past. And like you said, Mary, COVID has definitely touched the lives of all of the so many people and a lot of the students. And we are seeing a lot of students come in that just need to be met where they are, not academically, but emotionally. And so I think that to have our staff trained and informed on how to do that and how to approach those students in order to be successful academically, I think it's super important and so worth every minute that we're spending on it.
It's not really counseling. As you said, it's to recognize. And so if a teacher recognizes it and can work with us, how would that work? Bring in other people or form a...
Well, and I think it's important that we do highlight that we are not counselors, so right. That is not part of it. But just understanding that when a student comes into a classroom, and if they are, because of the relationships that our teachers build with their students, they can tell when a student walks into a classroom if they have something that is going on that's not their usual, and they're off base a little bit. And so when they can sense that, then it's in order to move forward with that student in their learning process, you first have to address what's happening, because students don't learn when they are shut down because of something. And it can be something very, very small, as far as sometimes it's just a scent that they had, or sometimes it's a huge event that happened that morning in the home. And so it's just really important to be able to not necessarily dig into the depths of what it is they're going through, but recognize that they are going through something and provide them with some tools to work through that so that they can get back to a place of being able to be in a classroom and learn and participate.
And those are the tools that we're going to learn more about next week as a staff. Like, what kind of tools can we give those students so they can self-regulate? Mm-hmm. We're not going to fix their trauma. We're not going to fix what's in their head, but we can at least give them some tools so they can return back to normal life activities, in that case, a classroom environment, and be able to be successful in that.
It might be take a break.
Yeah. Yes.
It might be, I remember a student that I was involved with, she needed to go outside and walk around the park.
Yes.
Just to get some fresh air, to take that break and come back. It's just sometimes only that. But you'll learn a lot next week. So that's really...
We will.
I'm so excited.
A great recognition. Our times are different now than when, obviously, I was in school. But there's unique aspects to our world that inform how young people grow and develop. And it sounds like Forrest Byrd is keenly aware of that and wants to meet the students where they're at, as you said.
Yes.
I think it's important, too, Susie, to recognize that Forrest Byrd, one of the things you asked me earlier, and one of the things I should have highlighted a little more, is the fact that the teachers are so involved. The teachers are involved in everything, decision-making, and, you know, their opinions matter, and they have a voice. And I think that that's super important, because it also allows the teachers to have a say in what they need in order to help those students the best they can.
Mm-hmm. So it's a school community.
It is a community. It's very important to myself and to the board that we trust our teachers. They're professionals, and they know what they're doing, and they are working with the kids on a daily basis. So we need to trust their professionalism in choosing the right curriculum for the class at that time, or how to handle a student or work with a student in that moment. Because if we take away their autonomy, we're doing education as a whole a huge disservice, because it's disservicing our students. So I trust our teachers and our staff. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And that's how community supports the growing, developing human being, the student. What about the fuller picture of the parents' involvement and communication with the parents, and, you know, bringing the whole together?
So we have at our school, we have ADVO, or advocacy or advisory. So every student has, you know, a homeroom sense. And that really is, as a teacher, that's like you're kind of always, you know, involved with that student in particular and that group of students, and making sure that you're communicating home with parents about the student's grades, or maybe you're just honestly, I loved sending little highlights. You know, your student shared this really great story about, you know, Silverwood over the weekend sounded like a good time. Just wanting to make that connection and that relationship piece, but multiple times throughout the year. And I would say that that really is, you know,
the homeroom environment really is where the teacher gets to know the student and the whole family picture.
Yes. Yeah. So every student has like a teacher representative that's mm-hmm. that's in their corner.
Mm-hmm. And again, a small group, mm-hmm. 15 to 20.
And the students know that, well, I certainly hope they appear to anyway, that they have that, they can go to that Advo teacher that they have for the year and talk to them about struggles that they have in the classroom mm-hmm. or just little things that might be bothering them. And if it's not there, if they're not connecting with their Advo teacher, they're going to connect with another yeah. teacher. And we recognize that. Mm-hmm. So if they need a little break and they want to go to Todd's, mm-hmm. I'm going to say Todd's name because he's kind of famous, Todd Clonch.
What does he teach?
He teaches social studies. He's been there since the age of time, pretty much. But he is... Sorry, Todd. So he hates that he gets pointed out once in a while, but he's one of those people that hold very strict lines of behavior with the students, but builds very strong relationships. So he is, for a lot of students, their safe person. And so sometimes, and all our teachers are like that, but Todd has a particular gift in this. And so they'll come and sit in his room mm-hmm. while they find themselves again and are able to move on. Mm-hmm. So
it sounds like other teachers could go and sit in Todd's room and learn from Todd.
They do, actually, mm-hmm. sometimes they do that. He is particularly skilled as a social studies teacher, too, so they like to watch him teach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we talk about social studies, one of the questions I had is, do our students, this is just completely curriculum question here. Our students have civics or government? I've been thinking lately about the fact that we had that, and maybe it's called social studies mm-hmm. now, but it's not required?
Or it is
required.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like?
Oh, so we are big into civic understanding. So we have more lessons around that in our social studies on how to be a good civic citizen. So that starts at sixth grade and moves on and increases. Like, you can have a civil discussion without hating the other person, even though mm-hmm. they have a differing viewpoint. So that starts very early for us when we keep up with the current events in our social studies and all of our classes and allow the kids to have civil discussions. But in high school, government is an actual Idaho state requirement. So they all have one credit of government. We really looked at that one semester of government and felt that it was probably not enough for Idaho students. A lot of states actually have two semesters of government. So this year we added what we call it Western civilization, and it's the foundations of different governments and what those look like, and then move into the current governmental stuff in government class. And so that's a requirement now at Forest Park.
Excellent. I mm-hmm. think that will serve the students well as they move into the larger world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To understand that what this country is doing in with the bigger picture of the Western civilization.
Yes.
And the options and the why this is a unique democracy.
Mm-hmm. And I believe in hiring people that are experts in their field. So I just need to give a shout out to our government. Of course I do. Our government teacher, Blake. He's last year was his first year. And he's amazing. A force to be reckoned with. The kids love him. And one of the reasons that enticed us to hire him when we didn't really know him is he has a background in law. He was studying to be a lawyer and decided that education was his thing and went into education. So he can speak to the students on legal perspective in government class. And our students are so interested on how law works, mm-hmm. which everybody should. I think, in my opinion. But we have this guy who knows it forwards and backwards to teach him.
Well, you really lucked out then.
Yes.
I think you do that all the time with your hiring.
I'm very specific. We're very specific in the hiring, yeah.
As we have here with Rachel in the Performing Arts Choir and Theater. And it's not brand new, but it is going to be more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Just you wait.
So let's see. What else do we want to talk about? We talked about the new program called Trauma-Informed Training, which you're going to do with your teachers next week. And you talked about the parent newsletter. Did we talk about a parent newsletter?
I don't think we talked about it before the show.
Okay.
Yeah, so part of our communication.
A way to bring it together.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So some of our communications we have, besides the live communications, which I highly prefer, it builds a nice relationship, and it also builds understanding because sending a text is not the same. But we do have a newsletter that goes out about monthly. We send out mark your calendars to the parents every Monday. We have our social media posts that we try to keep light and encouraging with what our students are doing and learning. So we have those sort of communications, but I really like the live communication with our parents so they can ask questions and we can clear things up if there's not a full understanding of something. So, yeah.
And you do that how? On?
The live communication, phone calls, emails, we encourage our parents can walk in the building and come visit a classroom at any time. They just need to get a visitor badge.
A check-in at the office. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. We have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
And we encourage that.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. I think it's really does form in that community that needs to support these children, students.
And I feel like because of that, the parents can come ask us questions. Like, I'm going to tell you a wild story.
Okay.
So last year, I got a phone call from a parent that says, do you have kitty litter boxes in the school? I said, what are you talking about? Kitty litter boxes. Yeah, we heard that you guys have kitty litter boxes for students to use in the school. Well, I honestly have never heard of that until this moment that this parent called me. I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And she had to explain, you know, what she had heard. It was a rumor mill, right? I said, well, we use kitty litter to put over some student had thrown up in the bathroom and we wanted to get rid of the smell. So we put a little kitty litter on that somebody had in the back of their car. So maybe it came from that. I don't know. I said, no, we don't have any kitty litter boxes, but we will if we end up getting a school cat, but that's different. Yeah, because we have therapy dogs. I'm thinking we might need therapy cats.
I'd be for that.
Yes.
Well, what else do we want to say? I mean, how fortunate are we to have options? I always think of education should have options because not all people are the same. Not all children are the same. And Forest Bird really meets a certain way of, I like the thought that it's really a community-oriented school by bringing in all the aspects. I'm sure that the teachers just move right into the school, basically, and it becomes an integral part of their family life in a sense. And also in thinking, so what do you think of that?
Well, I think we are a community. We take care of each other. For example, with the fires that are going, the Sunset fires, we had some staff members in the line of the fire. And when we find that out, we watch the map and we're like, oh, it's getting close to their house. Mm-hmm. We had one staff member say, I wish people stop offering us their homes to come live in because we have so many offers from other staff and it's hard to say no, right? It's hard to say because people are so kind-hearted. We take care of each other here. Mm-hmm. And I equate it to almost like a family that we love each other. Sometimes we disagree, but we always love each other.
It's a family.
Huh? It's a family. And that we have the same perspective for our students, that we want to help them because all of the staff has such big hearts that even when they're out of school, if we hear something that has happened to them and they need a little help, we're reaching out as individuals. How can we help you? Do you need this? So it is what I think is the epitome of North Idaho living is that we take care of each other no matter what. And we, if there's something that happens, we reach out and we see if we can help. Almost to the degree of annoyance sometimes, like with the fire. But we know that we're there for each other. And even when we don't, we're the people that don't ask for help. We know, I think, in our community in North Idaho and in the school, we know there's people there for us.
Right. The beauty of a smaller community or educational community.
Mm-hmm.
I think about all the excitement there is to start the new school year.
Yes, I can't wait.
So how do you maintain that excitement and enthusiasm and energy through the year? I'm thinking of teacher self-care, something like that.
Rachel.
Amber. Because it gets kind of dicey in March, April, May?
Oh, February. Well,
February.
Is the worst.
February is the worst.
Why is that?
I think it's the darkest month.
It's the longest, shortest month of the year.
You need a sunroom, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, how do you take care of yourself?
I really try my hardest. Doesn't always work, but I really try to give myself a goal of, you know, I'm going to walk out those doors by this time.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever is left, I will get done tomorrow. But I think setting a clear boundary for yourself to not take everything home with you every day for hours was crucial for me this past year, to really hold myself to a boundary of a work-life balance. Because mm-hmm. There are days in teaching that are very hard, and you want to make sure that you take care of yourself so that you can, you know, be there for them tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. As administrators, I watch my wonderful staff, our wonderful staff, and I know Amber is already doing that sometimes they want to push themselves beyond their limits because they're so passionate. And I remind them, you can go home, tag out, take those personal days, have some caffeine. Here's a piece of chocolate.
Right.
And so they have their self-care, but it's I feel our jobs too, Amber, that we watch and we let them know when we feel like they're getting burned out, because sometimes they don't even know before the time.
Right.
But I also want to say we thrive on our students' energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I walk into this school sometimes and I'm dragging and I do not want to be there. And here comes the students walk through the door and they might be dragging too. So we make a joke about that. And then there's always that one morning student that just
ready to go.
Just energizes everybody and brings happiness to us. So students too are our sunshine.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you have regular staff meetings.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Smaller staff groups and then the whole group together at times.
Yeah, so we've got kind of a few different, like a rotating schedule of meetings, okay. Right? So you might meet with your department one week, then you'll meet either with like middle school teachers or high school teachers another week, and then another week we'll be together as a whole staff. So you really are able to bring up concerns to the people that need to know about those concerns, and then you could talk as buildings or as middle school versus high school, what's best for the students, what events do you have coming up that we need to be aware of, what fundraisers do we have coming up, and then we come together as a whole building for really, that's where, you know, Mary comes and she really lets us know, like, here's what we've got coming up, here's the new law.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Here's new laws that we have to be aware of. We have this parent community event that we need to make sure everybody has a role for. So, there's lots of points. The communication we have with parents is also the same level of communication we have as a staff.
I worked in a traditional public school for 16 years in Montana. So when I came to the charter school and was able to develop the school, we wanted to make sure that the teachers had a lot of meeting time. And knowing from my previous experience and compare it to now, we meet a lot. And so every Friday is a meeting day. We call it ROADS, Required Online Access
Day.
Yes. for success. We call it Roads to Lofton and we forget what it means.
No.
The students are online that day. They're working on their mastery, improving their projects or their papers, and they can come in from 12 to 3 for personal tutoring time. We have a lot of students come in for that. But our time from 8 to noon is our meeting time, our collaboration time, so we can create some very cool things and be on the same page together, as well as maybe there's a student who's excelling that needs additional challenging stuff in their classroom, or someone who's struggling. And so we discuss that too, so we all our kids have a good start for the next week.
I love Rhodes Days. I loved bringing students in and getting to really help them not get behind or challenge them or say, hey, let's relook at this assignment from last week and see how we can make this better for you. And again, kind of back to your question about how do you make that connection with students? Like that was another, that's another really great way to make that connection.
Sounds perfect. Well, it sounds like, I just did a calculation, you're going into your 25th year. Am I right about that?
Your
24th.
No, it's actually 31.
Okay, so I didn't do the math right. I need to go back to school.
Well, I started teaching in public.
No, I mean the Forest Bird Charter School.
Okay, start again. Because I was thinking the whole, like there's a reason I have gray hair. 31 years. So what did you say?
I think Forest Bird Charter School is going into its 25th year.
Forest Bird Charter School is longer. So 25. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, 25.
So congratulations.
There you go.
I'm not a math teacher. I work with money, but not
what an
math.
Amazing educational institution, we might call it, but really it's a community formed around students, and it's really unique. It's beautiful. And the work that you're doing is essential for our future in so many ways. We know that as educators. So.
Thank you, Susie.
I just want to thank you. Anything last words of wisdom?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for the first day of school.
Okay, and what day is that?
It's the day after Labor Day.
September 2nd.
September 2nd.
Yes.
And if there's still a few openings, folks can go to forestbirdcharterschool.org and see what's available and possibly apply for an exceptional educational opportunity.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank Executive Director Mary Jensen.
Mm-hmm.
Principal, new principal, Amber Williams.
Thank you.
And choir and theater teacher, Rachel Lacamari.
Yes, Lacamari. It was pretty good. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. Have a wonderful
school
year. Thank you so much for coming in. And there we have it.